This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
8th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue. In 2008, University of Utah economics student and Unitarian Universalist Tim DeChristopher committed an act which would redefine patriotism in our time. Follow Tim, bitter 70, from college student to incarcerated felon. He bid millions of dollars he didn't have to save thousands of pristine acres of land surrounding U.S. national parks. KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of this film screening. More information can be found at kboo.fm/bitter70film2013.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. What was that music?
That was Ani DiFranco.
Oh, Ani DiFranco.
Uh-huh.
No, she's...
You don't know who she is, do you?
She's trouble. No, she's trouble.
Clearly trouble.
Clearly
she's
trouble.
Uppity.
Yeah. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show from KBOO, 90.7 FM dial in Portland. That's Abe, I'm Joe, and what are we talking about?
We're turning now to a subject that we've addressed a number of times on this show.
Boring!
No, not at all boring.
Not at all boring.
The reason we keep returning to it, though, is it just won't go away. It will not go away.
What is that?
There are a number of conservative people in this country who get really bent out of shape when women are out there having unsanctioned sex.
Yeah!
Sex that hasn't been authorized.
Authorized, yeah.
Sex that
licensed.
Hasn't been consecrated by a marriage bed.
Licensed.
Regulated.
Sex. Oh, yes.
Unauthorized nookie. They get really bent.
I didn't know nookie. I didn't realize that was sex.
Yes, you did.
No, I don't know nothing.
All right, 503-231-8187. I want to go through this information quickly so we can get to your phone calls. I'm really interested to hear from people, first of all, what they feel about this issue. And secondly, I want to get at the question, why does this sort of thing keep happening? And by this sort of thing, I mean legislation that dramatically and insultingly curtails reproductive freedom.
I guess you could say they just keep poking at it.
You could say that, yeah.
But that would be inappropriate.
Yeah, you could say that. I'm not going to say that.
Okay, nobody's laughing.
All right. There are a number of pieces of legislation pending in state houses around the country. And I want to touch on them in order of least offensive to most offensive.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Yes. In both Michigan and Virginia, there are bills pending in the legislature to essentially reclassify abortion clinics as surgical outpatient centers. Now, this may sound sort of innocuous, but what this means is a whole new set of licensing and regulatory hurdles that these clinics have to overcome. This bill is essentially designed to price abortion clinics out of business.
That's really an important point.
There's a lot more insurance that you need as an outpatient surgical center. There's a much more expensive license that you need to get as an outpatient surgical center.
Okay.
And they've put this threshold at 150 procedures per year. So that's not a whole lot. And this is a bill clearly designed to put these places out of business.
Right.
So that's, as I said, at the least offensive end of the spectrum here. Similar bill is pending, as I said, there's one in Michigan, there's another in Virginia.
Yeah.
As an interesting sort of aside, the governor of Virginia, a guy by the name of Rick Snyder.
Oh, Rick Snyder.
He objected to a different bill in the legislature that would have required the purchase of a separate health insurance rider specifically to cover abortion. If you're a woman, you're living in Michigan, you become pregnant, you decide to exercise your constitutional right to terminate that pregnancy, you first got to go buy a separate health insurance rider to cover this procedure. But the governor vetoed this because he felt it was an inappropriate intrusion of the government into the free market.
Right. Free market trumps rules controlling women.
Right. So,
interesting.
Notwithstanding the issues, you know, regarding women and their sovereignty over their own bodies, this bill was too onerous because it monkeyed with the free market.
Well, there's a possibility for one of the great stupid fights of history, right there.
This, I would say, is one of the great stupid fights of history. So now we're moving on to the more offensive pieces of legislation pending. There is a bill pending in Alabama, much like the one introduced in Virginia and in Wisconsin last year, that would require a transvaginal ultrasound before a woman gets an abortion.
See, I am not going to touch all of the humorous and disgusting aspects of men inventing a way to be snooping in lady parts.
Well, I think that we do need to touch on that because I think that goes to the crux of this issue. Now, as you recall, last year when we visited this topic previously,
yes,
there were these sorts of bills pending in a couple of state houses, and they were pretty roundly and rightfully derided as the sort of fascist intrusions that they are. So this bill that was up in Alabama, or is up in Alabama, mandates that the physician perform, quote, either a transabdominal or transvaginal ultrasound, whichever would display the embryo or fetus more clearly.
So what is the rationale? I mean, I think it's stupid and it's unpleasant and it's to make women feel degraded and all that. I agree with all that. But what's the rationale?
Well, the rationale they will I think I've gone back and forth on this issue. I think they're coming from two places. First of all, I think that when pro-life people say that they have genuine concern for the fetus, I think we ought to take that at face value.
Okay.
I think most of these people do.
So every sperm is sacred, kind of?
Sort of.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's this innocent new life that must be allowed to carry to term, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Okay. The other place they're coming from, and I think this is especially clear with regard to these forced transvaginal ultrasounds, is this is the state. And when I say the state, this is a bunch of older conservative white guys. And It is worth noting that all of the bills I'm talking about today, their sponsors are universally white men. With regard to these transvaginal ultrasound bills, this is the state saying to a woman, if you dare to have unauthorized sex, and if you get yourself knocked up, we, the state, are going to give you a transvaginal ultrasound to show you who's boss. That's where I think this is coming from.
That's so creepy.
It is so creepy.
I mean, it's really just creepy.
And I know you didn't want to get into the nuts and bolts of this, but let's talk about this.
Nuts and bolts?
Bad analogy, sorry.
Okay.
Let's talk about this Alabama law for just a second. So it says that the physician has to perform either a transabdominal or transvaginal ultrasound, quote, whichever would display the embryo or fetus more clearly. Now, in the early stages of pregnancy, the first trimester,
hunting around there is going to be kind of...
No. The best way to get a clear image of the developing embryo is with a transvaginal ultrasound.
So this is
really a way for the Alabama state government to mandate this sort of ultrasound without actually saying so in the text of the legislation. Now,
this is all very nasty, isn't
it? This is all very nasty. This is all very creepy. And really, I think this is all an attempt by the conservative white patriarchy to keep women in their place because they are scared of female sexuality. They are scared of equality amongst the genders. And unless they're allowed to continue to exercise this control that they have wielded for a long, long time, they're going to get really upset.
Well, what if they authentically believe that, as I said a while back, that every sperm is sacred?
They're entitled to that belief, but they are not entitled to perform an invasive procedure on a woman against her will if she wants to have an abortion.
Ah.
So moving along our
spectrum of horrors.
Our spectrum of horrors, yes. There is a bill pending in Indiana. Now, Indiana, I don't really understand very well. I understood it to be...
It's the Hoosier State.
It's the Hoosier State.
Basketball.
I understand that it's a relatively conservative place, but I understood it more as sort of a purple state, if you will, a swing state that could go either way. But apparently there's a very strong streak of conservatism there. There's a bill pending before the Indiana legislature that would require not one, but two transvaginal ultrasounds for any woman who wants to use RU486, the morning after pill, emergency contraception.
Wow. Why two? What?
The first, allegedly, is so that the woman can be quite clear that there is, in fact, an embryo inside of her.
Okay.
And be made to understand that she's a vile murderess, a vile temptress who went out and had unauthorized sex, and now she's going to kill that little embryo. And the second ultrasound after the RU486 has been taken is to ensure that that the woman is healthy, that the right sort of post-procedural things are happening.
That sounds like ultimate just caca.
Two transvaginal ultrasounds, not for having an abortion, but for using emergency day after contraception.
Ah, morning after pill.
Right. I think this is significant for another reason. And if this precedent is allowed to be established, that these sort of restrictions are in place regarding the use of what is a contraceptive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a medical procedure. It's not abortion as we understand it. It is the use of an oral contraceptive. And now if this precedent is allowed to be established, I think it is a significant legal step in the direction of outlawing contraception itself.
Why is that? Wait a minute. Why is that?
Because here, essentially, you've so vilified it, that so stigmatized it, that it seems to be a significant step in that direction.
Okay.
We're going to make you do this if you use this sort of contraceptive. So we're thinking maybe we're going to mandate a transvaginal ultrasound, you know, just to make sure that you're healthy if you decide to use regular birth control pills too, if you decide to have an IUD implanted, if you decide to have hormonal implants put in other parts of your body.
So, pardon the expression, a slippery slope.
A slippery slope.
All right.
And it is my opinion that, yes, while the pro-life crowd does come from a place of genuine concern for the fetus, for whatever reason, religious, whatever, this is also about fear of women's sexuality and a desire to continue to exert control over women's sexuality. That's what I think. So my question to you listeners is, first of all, what do you think about this? And secondly, why does this keep happening in the 21st century? 503-231-8187. Leslie, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I think there should be a law requiring 5 vaginal ultrasounds in order to buy a gun.
What if you don't have a vagina?
Then you can't have a gun.
That makes sense to me.
Wow.
It makes about as much sense as some of these bills we're talking about.
Okay.
And I also think that for men who are really, really interested in preventing abortion, they should be very, very thorough about their use of birth control, and they should take responsibility for that. And they should use condoms. And if they don't want to use condoms, they should get a vasectomy. And I think that especially before they have sex with a woman, they should sit down and have a long conversation with her and find out what she thinks about abortion. And if they do not believe in abortion, and she does, they should zip their pants and go home.
Wow, you would really kill the romantic life of the American couple.
Well, apparently romance isn't high on these people's radar. They're concerned about, you know, the fetus is primary, and these men should take responsibility. If preventing abortion is the number one priority in their world, then shouldn't you not sleep with women who believe in abortion? Doesn't that make sense?
Well, yeah, and in fact, it'd really be safe. They should probably...
not have sex at all.
Well, or become gay.
Right.
Well, I think so, yes. I think they should attend conversion therapy and become gay.
I think there's two solutions to the problem, following your logic. Number one is some kind of conversion aversion therapy so that these hetero men will become gay, mandated surgery.
I don't think it'd be too much of a leap for them, because I don't think most of them like women that much anyway, so...
Well, there you go. Thank you for the call.
Hey, thanks very much for the call. She actually brings up a very important component of this conversation. The obvious riposte to the religious...
Riposte. I didn't even know there was such a
That's
thing.
That's a fencing term. It's French.
Ah.
Okay.
Okay.
The obvious response to the religiously motivated pro-life crowd is, well, if you want to prevent abortion, why not go ahead and prevent conception? Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Well, yeah.
But their response, most of them, and I'm painting with a broad brush, I realize here, is that to do that is to encourage promiscuity. And that might even be worse.
Yes.
Because, you know, if we make it easy to prevent conception, why then people are going to run out and have unauthorized sex all the time.
Well, that was always the fear.
That was always the fear. But here's the irony. People are already running around having unauthorized sex all the time. The vast majority of us have sex before we're married, those people who do get married, and a significant part of that majority has it before the age of 18. This is our culture. People's first sexual encounters overwhelmingly happen in that 14 to 19 or 20-year-old age range. The vast majority of these people are not married. This is, in the traditional religious definition of the term, unauthorized, unsanctioned, unbiblical sex. But we're having it, all of us, almost all of us. So this seems to me to be yet another dig-in-their-heels attempt by the white religious male patriarchal structure to make sure that they can exert what dwindling control they still have over women.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things about these kinds of issues is that faced with the reality that we as people in this society can't control, can't empower ourselves to get control of the economy, can't get a reliable control of the political system, can't get control of the environment, can't do any of the things that are so important, we then turn into a focus on a smaller, in the sense of the size of the, well, a smaller issue where men can exert control, can have power, and can effectively impact the lives of women.
I'll agree with about half of that. Where I disagree is characterizing it as a smaller issue. There are more women in this country than men. This is something that affects more than 50% of the population.
Well, and even more so, as it were.
All right, then. Let's go back to the phones. Charlene, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to talk about transvaginal ultrasound.
Yeah, please, yes.
Yeah, I know nothing of this, I must say.
That's why I thought that I should phone, because, excuse me, not for abortion, but for ovarian cancer.
Uh-huh.
I was, we didn't know what it was, and I was sent for a transvaginal ultrasound. And it was quite a lengthy procedure and uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
Larger than, well, I haven't seen too many penises, but larger than all the penises I've seen. And there were a lot of moving around and things in there. And here's the point that I really especially wanted to make. I was asking the technology person, the mm-hmm. lady that was doing it,
mm-hmm.
tell me what you see.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I am only here to do the filming or whatever it was that she was doing. She says, I'm not allowed. I'm not a trained something that requires an MD to actually read and to know what it is. And she didn't tell me, and it was actually a 12-centimeter ovarian tumor that was pretty darn obvious when I looked at it later, but and was told, here's you know where you look for it. But I also had an MRI and a CT, and none of those people could tell me what they were seeing. I was sent from place to place. I go, like, something's going on here, because this is not where you're normal. But everybody said, I am not authorized, not trained.
Huh.
It has to be this MD-trained radiology or whatever the person would be to read it and to tell you. So
well, yeah, I think it would be a radiologist.
I'm
agreeing with you. I think it would be a radiologist, and I think it's a nice way to keep lots of money flowing into the coffers of the medical establishment.
Well, here's what I'm saying, that if we have all these transvaginal ultrasounds, the person who does it, it'll have to be an MD or somebody else, because the other person will say they can't tell you, or I don't know. It just seemed a little bit awkward when it was so obvious.
It sounds pretty awkward. Yeah.
Who's telling you, or maybe they want to tell you, like maybe if it's a cancer thing, they say, well, we're going to have somebody who knows how to talk to you, sit down with you, and we're just trained to do the technical stuff here. But in this other case, they're going to train the technology people. They're just slam them with whatever you want to slam them with, and don't bother to.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how it's going to be, but and you can ask me any questions about the procedure if you'd like.
That's our for-profit medical system at work right there.
Well, you know, I guess I do have a question. I mean, you've indicated, and I have heard from others, that this is not something simple, that this is a really invasive procedure. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So what they're really doing with these laws is a process of degradation and humiliation of women who seek abortions.
Yes.
Well, especially if it's forced upon you. I actually wasn't told that it was going to be transvaginal. I was told I was being sent for an ultrasound. So I was kind of surprised when the technology person told me what she was doing. I went, whoa, okay, let's slow way down here. Because I've always thought of an ultrasound as something that you just put a little jelly on somebody's skin.
Yeah, the transabdominal ultrasound, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking was going to happen. So it was a little bit of a shock, but I thought okay, because I trusted my doctor.
Yeah.
And it turned out that it was the right thing, because it wasn't the fibroids.
Yeah, no, I think it's important under certain circumstances, and you're describing a case where it was a fortunate discovery, I assume, for you, a life-saving one. And I my point is that really what's being done here, given the invasiveness of the procedure, is a formalized, ritualized humiliation of women who seek to end a pregnancy.
Ritualized, formalized penetration of women.
Yeah.
Against their will.
Which is, you know, which is creepy in any context.
Which is rapey. It is rapey is what it is.
It is. And especially if they get men to do these, to be the tech. I was just,
indeed,
as I was having it, I was going, thank God this is a woman doing this.
Right.
Well, listen, thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate your perspective, having undergone this procedure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Joe, you're absolutely right. I think this is about degrading and humiliating women who dare to go out there and have sex for their own reasons.
Well, it does seem that way to me. And I think one of the things that's happened in our culture is through 100 years, maybe even more, we have seen the prerogatives of power that men have been able to use by the law, by custom, by religion, etc., slip away. And now the last vestige of that power is in terms of forcing women to bring fetuses to term, mm-hmm, and also forcing women to undergo humiliation should they attempt not to bring a fetus to term.
Yeah, it's all pretty icky.
So it's icky and power.
It is. And it's a helpful exercise here is, you know, to imagine the shoe is on the other foot. Imagine that that these things were being asked of men or mandated of men. I think, you know, if men could get pregnant, abortion clinics would be common like Starbucks, and the morning after pill would come in flavors like spearmint and Tutti Frutti.
Well, actually, Gloria Steinem said something very similar to that, you know,
quite
a few years ago.
What did she say?
Well, I think her line was something like, well, honey, if men could get pregnant, abortions would be as common as, I can't remember.
Oh, okay. So. Well, I just ripped off Gloria Steinem. I'm
all
right with that.
That's all right. You can, what's the word for when you follow? Never mind. Yeah. Glorious.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Who do we have next, Steve? Lindsay, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
What's on your mind?
Well, I am a mental health therapist, and I just wanted to sort of add that perspective to this whole thing.
Please.
You know, abortion in and of itself is a very traumatic procedure. And I feel like adding all of this, you know, these ultrasounds are going to add a whole other layer of shame and trauma to an already really,
agreed,
really
It's slut shaming, is what it is. This is good old slut shaming in the Hester Prynne mold.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know. It's like, do you want, you know, a bunch of traumatized women with PTSD, you know, or do you want, you know, a bunch of children who aren't being cared for properly? And, you know, I mean, it's like, it just seems like it's creating all kinds of these, like, cultural problems that are going to be worse than actually allowing women to have rights over their reproductive issues.
Yeah, I agree. It's certainly not a solution to whatever problem these lawmakers see out there.
Well, actually, I think, I really do think it's about power, and I think it's really important that we pay attention to this stuff. It goes state by state, but eventually it becomes normative for every state, and then suddenly this is what's regularly done. Anyway, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what else? What other states? I mean, you were going from the bad to the worser.
Indeed. We've got these various actions pending in Michigan, Indiana, Alabama, Virginia at the moment.
That's it.
Right now, yes. But the danger here, as I said before, is establishing precedent in any one of these cases. It puts us onto a very slippery slope. There's been a concentrated and ongoing attack since the Roe v. Wade decision in 1972.
Yeah.
And this is one of those issues on which I don't think we can afford to give any ground at all.
Well, I mean, the problem, the bizarre problem that's involved in all of this, I think, is the interface of faith-based thinking, religion, with science-based thinking. And we see this in all kinds of ways. There's a tremendous movement of people who don't want to, I mean, the Catholic Church is a leader in this, who don't want to help terminate life when it's unbearable and can only end in a longer, slower death, for example. We actually have all kinds of ways in which society imposes its will upon individuals under the most desperate or difficult circumstances. And this is just another example, a perhaps more egregious example in a certain way, because we're dealing with healthy people.
Yeah. It is about power and control.
But I think that this is this goes to the very, very heart of our thinking about life and our mystical way of approaching life. And I just I think it's very hard to peel away all these socially constructed realities around pregnancy and around children and around sexual intimacy. And to really look at what really happens as opposed to the mythologies.
What I find offensive, I mean, I find all this proposed legislation offensive, but I also find offensive the notion that if you support a woman being able to decide whether or not she wants to carry a pregnancy to term, if you support that, then you somehow do not value that mystical connection to life, that you do not value the notion of life itself. You do not value the notion of child rearing in any sort of sense. Now, I think that they're not incompatible with one another. I'm just going to paint an example here for the sake of argument. Say a young woman, age 18 or 19, finds herself pregnant, decides that she simply can't have the kid at this point, decides to have an abortion. That woman has not abrogated her connection to any sort of mystical connection to life. She has not forsaken for all time her right to be a mother. I'm sure at some time and point in the future that woman may very well decide to have a kid and be good at it and be ready for it and have that mystical connection and participate in that ongoing perpetuation of our species that, you know, for anyone who's seen it firsthand and participated in raising a kid, is one of the most profound and wonderful parts of being a human being. You can be for reproductive choice and still be for the wonderful part of a human being that has to do with perpetuating our species. They're not incompatible with one another.
Yeah, but there's naughty involved.
Yeah.
Naughty.
Let's go back to the phones. Karen, good morning.
Good morning. I just think this is, it's amazing that we still have to have this conversation.
Well, it is, and it's very sad.
It
really.
Is.
Yeah. It is sad. And, you know, I have a couple of thoughts that occur to me. One is that, you know, it's pretty obvious that these are not happening through immaculate conception.
What? You know what, I mean? What? You mean something else goes on?
Right. It does take two.
Yes.
So, and you know, one of your earlier callers kind of referenced that as well. And but you know, it's amazing. You know, I was just looking on a website, and the Centers for Disease Control says that there are 234 abortions per 1,000 live births.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that there are, you know, really millions of women that have chosen this alternative. So for the other part of the non-immaculate conception activity that's going on, you know, the males are deciding for millions and millions of women how they should live their life.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's clearly about power. I mean, we can spend a lot of time waltzing around it, but it's about power, and it's about a tradition of white male control over women.
Yeah. Now, there's another part of this, which I think, you know, the fact that we are still having this discussion, I think it provides a great distraction, because there are a lot of things going on in our country and actually across the world that are quite serious in terms of control, you know, other control issues, and mm-hmm. corporations and money and foreclosures and, you know, all these different things. And this gets people upset. You know, talking about abortion gets the blood going, and, you know, you kind of get to these core values, and people get upset with one another, and it just provides an incredibly effective distraction away from all these other things that we really need to talk about.
Well, I think I both agree and don't agree. Yes, I think that it can be used as an effective smokescreen, but that doesn't make these issues any less fundamental or any less important.
Oh, absolutely. No, they're core, and that's what's so frustrating. And as a woman, you know, I certainly would like to have some say in all this.
That's true. I think you could argue that gay marriage has been used as a smokescreen in that regard.
Absolutely.
Despite the fact that it's also fundamentally important.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the discussion.
Yeah, thank you very much for the discussion. I think that this gets at control. Exercising control over feminine sexuality has been part of our culture for literally thousands of years. It is baked into our mythology. If you look at Judeo-Christian tradition, there are not very many female archetypes there. You have the Virgin Mary, who somehow is the embodiment of all things wonderful about motherhood and about femininity.
Magical lady.
Right, but somehow she never had sex.
She had parthenogenesis.
Yeah, try reconciling that, women. She's the perfect woman, but she never had sex. See if you can manage that.
Well, she had an angel.
Right.
Okay.
And you also had, going further back, you had Abraham's wife, Sarah, whose great shame for much of her life was the fact that she could not get pregnant with Abraham's seed, whether or not that was actually her fault biologically. And she carried this shame deep into her life. Abraham even had to turn to one of his slave women in order to begat. There was a lot of begatting that went on in the early parts of the
Bible.
Well,
they're big in the begats.
They are big in the begats. And until finally, very late in Sarah's life, God decided to gift her with a child, thus finally validating her as a human being.
Yes.
And there aren't a whole lot of other feminine archetypes in Judeo-Christianity. You got Mary Magdalene, Jesus' friend, but she, of course, is a prostitute. So, where do women look if they want an idealized, mythologized icon of, you know, a liberated, a fully equal, empowered woman? And the answer is there isn't one. There is not that archetype within Western mythology.
There is the suffering woman, the martyred woman, the abused woman as heroic figure in giving testimony to the great truth of the coming of the Lord. I mean, that's big.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, it's very important. The Black Virgin, the Virgin of Guadalupe, all over the world, special local examples of the so-called universality of Mary, the Mother of God.
Yeah, they're iterations of that first archetype.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's no archetype for the 21st century woman. There's nothing there. I would go so far as to say there's really not a lot, and I'm risking offending our Christian listeners out there. There's really not a lot for women in Western religion.
Well, I won't go that far, but I do think that we have a place, a society in which some things are really absurd. I got upset at the Pope having red shoes.
Oh, that's horrible.
Well, it's because it was before spring. Red shoes after spring
right.
is okay.
Yeah, and you don't
as
want,
a fashion statement.
You don't want white shoes after Labor Day.
No.
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 All right, let's go to the phones. Leah, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I have so much to say, but the comment that Betty Friedan made was if men could get pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament.
Yes.
But I want to address the medical stuff. For a couple things, this is about rape, yes, but it's about a medical establishment that has continued from the very get-go, from the first time the men took over, mistreating, abusing, torturing, and now we have a form of medical rape that is allowed. And this is absolutely outrageous and unconscionable. And any doctor worth his salt should refuse to do this. I'm hoping that OPB will rerun the 2-hour show on the women's movement that they had on the other night.
Yeah, it was actually pretty good.
Oh, I did not see that.
Incredible. I lived through a whole lot of that. I was in Berkeley in the 60s and was there when a lot of that was happening. And you can't imagine, I mean, I look back, and I wasn't in a place mentally that I could really, or emotionally, to participate. But I look back now, and it's like I want to get out there and march. And one of the things I realized just this morning was I was present at the marches on 1 Billion Rising. And guess what? There were no Occupy there. Where were they? Hmm. So I'm really upset with that. But anyway, that's what it is.
Yeah, I want to just briefly address the whole Occupy question, but I don't want to turn the show into a discussion of that.
No, I don't either. But
it is one of the things that happens in movement politics generally is there will be these rises of mass appeal organization or disorganization, as in the case of Occupy, which have an impact, but then fade into the woodwork until another thing appears.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that it's that there has to be a formal structure for, particularly for street protest. But, you know, you're making a good point. We would hope that we would see more involvement by more people, particularly men, who should be understanding the implications of this for everybody.
Well, there's also incredible evidence, scientific evidence now, that shows what kind of damage, emotional and mental damage that can be done to a fetus who has a mother under stress. So if
good
you're
point.
Medically raping
point.
A woman, imagine what that's doing to the fetus. And Gabramonte documents this through brain damage and what happens in later life, and he traces it back to in a lot of addicted people to what's gone on before they were born, when they were born, and around that time.
Huh.
You know,
I know nothing of that literature, but well, I appreciate your comment.
Yeah, there it is. Okay, thanks, guys.
Hey,
thank you.
No, I appreciate
thanks
it
Thanks for fighting the good fight, Leah.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, no, I think about all of this a lot, and my bias tends to run toward these massive problems that we're facing, you know, environmental problems and so on and so on. But I think that the fundamental question of human rights as it relates to women really does unfortunately come down to the reproductive rights. I say unfortunately because this is a realm in which men in legislatures have undue power.
It's not limited to reproductive rights, but you're right. It's right down to the very core. You know, and as broken as our system of government is, as flawed in as many ways as our society is, the extent to which we have been able to remove traditional shackles on women and begin to bring women into larger society as true participants in political and economic and social power,
mm-hmm.
I think that has to go down as one of the lasting great achievements of Western civilization. I'm proud of that, and I think we should all be proud of that. And bills like this are an attempt to turn back the clock on that kind of progress and re-subjugate women to where they have been for most of human history.
Well, I think you're right.
That's why we can't give any ground on this at all.
And I think that we're fortunate here in Oregon, but I think eternal vigilance, I hate to say a trite thing, is the price of liberty, particularly reproductive liberty.
I agree. Who's next, Steve? Barth, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Long time no talk. Mm-hmm. Appreciate your guys' efforts all the time, and it's nice to participate once in a while. I'm going to dash across a few things that you brought up.
Sure.
The RU486, the two transvaginal ultrasounds for prescription of the pill, day after pill, literally. Can an implanted egg be seen on an ultrasound after one day?
No.
No. And I don't think it matters to the authors of this legislation.
But I think that that is the breaking point of the law, because that essentially is...
it's irrational.
Well, it's cruel and inhumane punishment.
Yeah. Well, and it also makes no real logical sense. I mean...
Well, but there are laws against cruel and inhumane punishment.
Well, sort of.
In that this has, if this has no verifiable medical use, you know, that no one can say, oh, yes, this is essential and that it actually does perform some function. I mean, if their abstract function, however vague, was being actually addressed and realized, then that would be, you know, have some standing. But
no,
I would think, you know, and I'm not supporting that, but in that it seems from a medical and physiological viewpoint that this is not going to give any useful information, then it becomes merely a violation of the self.
Oh, yeah. No, this is about power. This is about
agreed,
oppression.
But it would seem like that would be a way to challenge the law.
I would think so. But, you know, while we're all challenging the law and perhaps winning, probably winning, women are suffering and
true.
Being abused. And I think that really the extent of the implications for abuse, for a statement about the right of women to have control of their own bodies, you can't beat this stuff, because this is really, all right, this is invasive, this is nasty, this is degrading, this is dangerous even, and this is unnecessary. And all of that states really is a way of stating that men have the right to control women, and that's what this really ultimately is about.
Yes.
Anyway, I think we all sort of, so far in the calls, have agreed on that. But it is important to understand the degree to which some men in some states will go to make sure that women are subservient and under their control, and that there's a kind of a definition of good girls and bad girls inherent in the relationships between the sexes.
Agreed. Now, you're touching upon redesignation as outpatient surgical clinics.
Right.
15 procedures a year is just about 3 a week.
No, not 15 a year.
150 procedures a year is 3 a week.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. If we had equal representation in government, participation by male and female legislators would balance out the lunatic fringe here.
I think it's telling that there are no female legislators introducing these bills.
Well,
also, the numbers are just so small that they can't just go up to these guys in conference and say, really? Really? Really?
Yeah. Say what?
Morality is not primarily based in dogma. You know, Joe was trying to make that point earlier, and that you don't have to necessarily be an adherent to a specific spiritual path to have a moral view of the world and to want only fairness and balance in your dealings with your fellow humans. So I know that a lot of this legislation comes out of a perhaps somewhat distorted moral / religious thinking, and I think that that's an important point to make.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you, and I'm glad you called about it.
One other thing, Abe, good old slut shaming?
Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Well,
yes.
I think that you could have phrased that a little differently.
Okay.
Well, Abe is well known for his sensitivity.
Yeah, that's right.
And political correctness.
Joe, yes, true.
Yeah, well, we're really, really good with that. But you're right. There are better ways to phrase things. However, trying to talk to the reality of what's going on. So sometimes the language gets a little
I don't have any problem with that language, and I'll probably say it again.
Okay, slut shamer. Yeah, yeah. All right, hey, thank you very much for the call.
Thanks. Good day.
All right, let's take care of a little business, and then I'll explain what I mean by slut shamer.
Yeah, you better.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, an alternative radio activist and lawyer David Cobb speaks on Move to Amend. At 10 here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, the Pope jumps ship right before the High Holy Days. We'll look to someone who wants to summon the ex-Pope for an international prosecution. Wouldn't that be something? And we feel excerpts from Over Troubled Waters, a new documentary on the battle to prevent corporate water poachers from diverting and stealing the public source of all life, fresh water.
Well, actually, yeah, there's this Nestle plan to produce bottled water over by the Bridge of the Gods.
I don't understand bottled water. We all have pipes that bring us water, right? Why do we need to ship it around?
The bottled water is in a bottle. It's better.
Okay. At 11, Stage and Studio takes a look at Soweilu Theater's Hard Times Come Again No More by Martha Bozing.
Yeah,
host Emay Roberts talks with Soweilu's Lorraine Barr and Martha Bozing, plus a writer's read segment with Bing Bingham in Antelope, Oregon. And at 11:30, Art Focus, Joseph Gallivan interviews Miles Cleveland Goodwin about his new painting show, A Long Road Home, at Froelich Gallery. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
Hey, KBOO is so cool.
Here's what I mean by slut shaming.
Yeah, what do you mean by slut shaming?
For time out of mind, there have been two dramatically different standards applied to male and female sexual behavior.
Right.
Traditionally, the more partners a man has, the more sex that he has, the more of a man he is considered by his peers, the more virile he is, the more deserving he is of status within the pack. The inverse has been true for women. The more partners a woman has, the more sex she has for whatever reasons, the more she is called out and shamed for it. That's what I mean by slut shaming.
I see.
That's why it has to.
So by definition, a woman who's sexually active with more than one person outside of marriage is by definition a slut.
Indeed. A woman who behaves like a virile, manly man behaves is not a very womanly woman, but rather a slut. That's why Hester Prynne in The Scarlet Letter had to go wear that letter A around, because she had unsanctioned sex. She was slut-shamed publicly. And there's variations of this that happen today. I mean, just ask a kid going to high school.
Okay.
Now, fortunately, this is beginning to change. We're entering a period where women are judged much less harshly about making sexual decisions for their own reasons. I think that women are more free today to have sex with whomever they please for whatever reasons they please at times and places of their choosing and not be judged for it. That is progress. But that scares the bejeebus out of the anti-abortion crowd.
Well, right. I mean, I think that what's happening in American politics today is a struggle against modernity.
Yes.
Agreed. And I think that we're seeing it all in all kinds of ways. Actually, you know, the issues involved really have never been effectively resolved for a certain significant minority. Remember that there's 30 to 40% of Americans who think that the entire universe is only 6,000 years old. And that there was an Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, and blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
So you've got to realize that ignorance flows through our society very much like blood.
I want to read an email that came in. We are taking your emails, joeandabe@yahoo.com. Good morning, Susan writes. This morning's discussion about the movement in these various legislatures seems a bit ageist. There are millions of women having legitimate or illegitimate sex who are no longer of reproductive age. They are not being targeted, nor even spoken of. I think the actions by these states primarily has to do with anti-abortion sentiment for this reason. Whenever women and sex come up for discussion, postmenopausal women are never considered.
That's true.
It's true. You are making an implied assumption that only young women have sex and only single young women.
I'm not sure we're making a plot.
I'm not sure we are either. But she does
make
a good point.
I think she makes a good point, yeah.
There, by definition, discussions about abortion and women are going to include women of childbearing age.
Yes.
But Susan is right. I mean, we should not assume that women who are postmenopausal suddenly stop having sex or don't have a voice in this conversation. She's absolutely right.
Okay.
She goes on to say women are fertile for fewer years than they are non-fertile. Yet women in this latter group are not the subject of the discussion. How does this reconcile with your discussion?
We're focusing on the issue of reproductive rights, which by definition involves women who can conceive.
Yes. Let's go back to the phones.
All right.
Who's up, Steve? Marla, good morning.
Good morning. Good show, as usual, fellas. Okay, 3 points. Number one, I believe that religion, Christian religion, is based exclusively on the sexual act, the fact that there is enjoyment with it, and that's why they had to make a virgin birth. Number two, let's face it, it takes two people putting their two parts together. That's the only way conception can happen. And in that fact, I forgot my point. I can't believe it. All right, I'll go on to my third point and come back to that because it is important. That's why we should have equality. You've got to have both, so that's equal. The third is, for our country espousing such tremendous belief in democracy and freedom of speech, look at our representation in our government for the women population of this country since it began in 1776. It's unbelievable that it is still in America thought to be that women just can't handle being in the legislative bodies. It's so wrong. So
we have a long way to go.
We really do, and that's my statement today.
Thank you for the call. And I would point out to our caller that, yes, she's right, but we have, through time, through horrible things, including a civil war, gained more freedom and more access to political participation.
She's right, though. She made a very cogent point, I thought, about the tendency of a very religious people to define human beings almost entirely in terms of the kind of sex they have. For example, the fundamentalist religious objection to homosexuality is really all about the kind of sex that gay and lesbian people have, not about those human beings in their totality. In the minds of the Christian fundamentalist anti-gay bigots, somebody is defined, full stop, by what they do in bed, which is a silly way to define somebody.
Ah, 30 of your life's in bed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Who's next, Steve? Ed, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I think Joe is right on point earlier in the program when he said, when he asked, what's the rationale of this? And Joe, by the way, I thought you were being very funny. I don't get a chance to tell you that very often, but I thought you were very funny.
Well, thank you, I guess.
Okay, now, anyway, it doesn't seem to be the object doesn't seem to be to prevent conception. It seems to be focused on preventing abortion. And I think it's played itself out in Mississippi, where they have the fewest number of abortions, but I think the highest infant mortality rate. So it doesn't seem that they're so concerned about the consequences of not having that abortion and taking care of that child.
Exactly.
But I think what the point that Joe brought up as far as the rationale is, what happens when you force a woman to have a baby? Now, not everybody gives it up for adoption, so they're going to keep, let's say that they do keep the baby. Well, the consequences of that economically for a young person is profound. And
socially,
not only for the mother, but sometimes in a lot of cases for a man as well.
And so for now, the baby, don't forget the baby here.
So then you ask yourself, what is the rationale? What does that do? What does that do for society?
Here's the rationale.
Under a democracy, the easiest way to manipulate a people is through democracy, because it gives everybody the ability, the right to vote. But if you can keep people economically challenged, they have not so much time to go to school to get educated or to spend time studying issues. They only have a limited amount of time to get a sound bite from Fox News to move them in a direction that, let's say, that the government wants to move them. Anyway, that's my thoughts on it. You guys go ahead.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah, the rationale, I think, behind forced childbirth is to let that woman know who's boss.
Well, I think there are a number of factors, to be fair. There is a continuing and ongoing religious notion about the function of sex.
Mm-hmm.
That it is an act that serves only for the necessary continuation of the human race.
But I would say that the vast majority of sex that's being had out there, whether gay or straight or whatever, is recreational and not procreational.
Well, I have no idea.
By a pretty wide margin.
I don't know. I mean, in the whole world, the vast majority.
Well, look back at your own life. I assume you've had some sex.
Never.
I would say most of it was probably for fun rather than with the fixed intention of creating a child.
Well,
right?
But you're missing my point. I'm arguing essentially that there's a magical, cultural, cross-cultural evaluation of the very enormous power of being able to have babies. To control that enormous power is necessary for a male-dominated society.
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
And so it goes. It's very, very fundamental to the heart of rule by guys.
Yeah, guys, I think are really insecure when you get right down to it.
Well, they're insecure for all kinds of reasons,
yeah.
And they have to be able to perform.
There's a pill for that. All right, let's go back to the phones. Who's up, Steve? Joe, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, one of the things that all these babies could be good for is cannon fodder for the military-industrial complex. So
that's
you want to prevent the abortion.
Also a good point.
You know, and another thing, too, with the ultrasound, I've heard several different OBGYNs talk about this. They said, if you're one of these people that just want to have an ultrasound to find out the sex of your baby, you're better off not exposing that developing fetus to any kind of energy, whether it's X-rays or ultrasound is a form of energy.
Sound wave.
And they said that it's better off not to do that because they're not completely sure it's 100% safe.
Hmm.
And the younger you are, whether you're out of the womb or in the womb, the more you are damaged by any kind of bad energy, whether it's ionizing radiation from an X-ray or whether it's the ultrasound or whatever, you know, or poisons or toxins in our atmosphere. But I think that the congressional military industrial complex, that's the way Eisenhower's original speech was written. They basically have, snapped up all of these right-wing...
I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there because we are simply out of time.
We're out of time and he's fading.
Vigorous discussion today. Thanks,
yeah,
everybody,
thank
for your
you.
Contributions.
Thank you all.
All right,
see
we'll
you
be
next
back
week.
At you next week.
Bye-bye. Stay tuned to KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio Night for the 2013 Blazers season will be April 17th, the last home game of the regular season.
Tickets are limited for this unique opportunity where a portion of the proceeds will help support your community radio station.
More information can be found at kboo.fm/blazers.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock, and here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First, on alternative radio, activist and lawyer David Cobb speaks on Move to Amend. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, the Pope jumps ship right before the Holy Days. We'll look to someone who wants to summon the ex-pope for an international prosecution. And we feature excerpts from Over Troubled Waters, a new documentary on the battle to prevent corporate water poachers from diverting and stealing the public's source of all life, fresh water. And at 11 o'clock, Stage and Studio takes a look at Soweilu Theater's Hard Times Come Again No More by Martha Bozing. Host Dime Roberts talks with Soweilu's Lorraine Barr and Martha Bozing, plus a Writer's Read segment with Bing Bingham in Antelope, Oregon. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Gallivan interviews Miles Cleveland Goodwin about his new painting show, A Long Road Home, at Folick Gallery. Thanks, KABU members, for your generous support. If you are not a KABU member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now here's Alternative Radio.
We've lost control of this country, folks. These restrictions I'm describing are not just my wishful thinking. It's not just what Move to Amend would like to see, although it is. It is our history. This is the legacy of this country. We don't know our own history, and if we did, it would actually, I think, inspire us to act like our ancestors did in the face of this corporate power.
That's David Cobb, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features David Cobb on a declaration to amend. Concerned about the influence of money in politics? You should be. Politics looks more and more like an auction, with seats going to the candidate who raises the most money. The so-called level playing field is now heavily tilted toward the wealthy. Democracy is fast becoming a cashocracy, ruled by plutocrats who control the purse strings. The January 2010 Supreme Court Citizens United Money Equals Free Speech decision has opened the proverbial floodgates. The ruling gave a green light to them that's got to give as many greenbacks as they want to buy elections. Corporations and rich fat cats can now give unlimited amounts of money funneled through super PACs to the politician of their choice, and much of it is in secret. A concerted grassroots effort, Move to Amend, is being made to pass a constitutional amendment to reverse the effects of Citizens United. To talk about these issues is David Cobb. He's a lawyer and activist and was the Green Party presidential candidate in 2004. He's a leading voice in the move to amend the Constitution to repeal corporate rights. He spoke in Boulder, Colorado, at an event organized by the local Move to Amend group. And now, David Cobb.
Folks, I'm going to tell a story. I'm going to tell a story on how it came to be that large transnational corporations are not just exercising power. I'm going to tell a story on how it came to be that large...